Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call talks with the people in Charlottesville and Albemarle County who are making a difference. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thanks for listening. Today we're going to do local real estate and our economy. My good friends and regular guest, Matt Hodges, Presidential Bank Mortgage.
Good morning, Rick.
Thanks for coming back. And Jim Duncan, Nest Realty.
Hey, Rick, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you, gentlemen, for returning for what's become a regular show.
Annual tradition.
Yes. I've got us down as local realty and the economy. We always seem to stretch that a little bit. But we like to talk about what's going on in Charlottesville and Albemarle and surrounding counties, about housing, what's going on, how to buy a house, things to look for. I've got some other interesting things on the list today. So hopefully listeners will be as fascinated as I've become when you guys are in here teaching me what's going on in the world of real estate. One of the things that I always have to ask questions about, and I'm going to start with this, Jim, I think you sent me this, is I have no idea what the micro market is. And one of the things that you sent a question is focusing on your micro market. So when you go to buy a house, and I'm out there trying to shop for a new house, and I can't decide, or I know what kind of house I'm looking for. I need a 3-bedroom, 2-bathroom, et cetera, et cetera. What in the world is the micro market?
Well, it's easy. The micro market is your specific band, if you will. You're looking for the 3-bed, 2-bath, you know, 300 to 350 house. Whereas when you look at like the stats we have for last year, there the broader stats are an indicator of the market, but they're somewhat, I think they're somewhat meaningless and deceptive for the individual buyers. Like if you look at the Albemarle County for last year, 1,936 homes sold in Albemarle, which is up a little bit from 1,884 in 2018. Okay, great. Median price was 376, and which was actually was up from down from 388 the previous year. So, I mean, I think that what I mean by micro market is focus on 3-bedroom or 4-bedroom, 2.5-bath, 350 to 450 in Forest Lakes. That's your band that you care about. Looking at the Albemarle County stats or the Charlottesville-Albemarle stats or the Charlottesville MSA stats, state or national, those are indicators of what may be happening in the market, but they're not reflective of your market. Like there's some properties in the city that go under contract in 18, 36 hours. Those are lumped into the same stats with the property with acreage in, you know, X part of Albemarle County that's been sitting on the market for 187 days. When you look at those broad stats, those are both lumped into the same numbers. So when I tell my buyers and my sellers, look at what's relevant and important to you, because you can go online and see, you know, all the numbers. But the question that I coach my clients through is, what does this mean to you? Because I think that when you look at the broad stuff, it can get confusing and can make it less of a focused search.
And so how do I find that information? I mean, who breaks it down into that much detail?
I do. I mean, I think any competent professional real estate agent is going to be able to help that buyer or seller look at their micro market. And I think that, again, the way I practice is we focus on, you know, that narrow band of what's important to that client. So I think that it's important for the client to know what they don't know, or acknowledge that they don't know everything and they need somebody to guide them through that. Or those who, you know, there are also people who take the time to figure out exactly what they're looking for and focus on that. And I've said for years that, you know, since my job, if you will, moved away from finding homes, you know, I help the people determine what they want. But the people who are my clients who are looking for homes, I joke kind of, but I think that they don't work, because all they do is sit in their office and search Zillow for homes that come on the market. That's all they seem to do. But those people know their micro market. They know their band of homes as well, if not better, than the person representing them, because they are completely focused on finding their next house. So my takeaway from my clients is, you can look at all the information. My job is to help you determine what the relevant information is for where you are in your life search of sale of a home.
It's Jim Duncan from Nest Realty. Matt Hodges, Presidential Bank Mortgage. Is there a micro information tablet of something that I don't know about in the mortgage area?
Well, in a sense, there is, because when we talk to clients about what their needs and their wants are, we try to define down to what they are looking for. I had a client call me recently and said, look, I've already looked at a bunch of properties that fit the number of bedrooms. It was 4. Number of baths. And I was like, okay, so what type of property are you looking for? A single family, a townhouse, a condo? She's, I don't care. I was like, well, that's going to make it really hard to find your property, just defining it.
Right, a condo versus the same thing on a horse farm is...
Indeed. And so I pressed her that she actually needed to maybe broaden that micro up a little bit, but make it specific to what she's looking for. So we see it. We're definitely having to help the client narrow down their focus so that they search what is relevant for what they want to purchase.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there are also, to add on to that, I mean, from my position, representing people, are there different loan products that they should be focusing on? I mean, because when I have clients who come in and they say, I have, X to put down, they might be looking at VA or FHA or conventional or interest only, or there's a whole slew of loan products out there.
Yeah, indeed there are. And the loan products that are available as you go to a lower down payment have income restrictions almost always. VA does not, but you have to be a veteran to qualify for that. But VHDA, USDA, Fannie and Freddie's 3% down program, they all have an income restriction. It could be based on where you live or just an overall number. So we definitely talk to clients about what their down payment desire is, what they can afford, what they earn, so that we know what programs to fit them into or provide as an option.
Okay. Hey, man, it's something that people come to me and they say, I've been looking, again, to pick on Zillow. I've been looking on Zillow at their mortgage calculator. It looks like I can afford this. I'm like, okay, great. Did you factor in property taxes and insurance?
Indeed, the online calculators are just an early guidepost, but it does not give you the richer feel. For example, homeowners association dues are never accounted for. So
yeah,
you sort of need to have that discussion with the client, too. If you're going to be buying in a townhouse, realize that could be anywhere from $70 to maybe $150 a month in extra fees.
Again, our guests today, Matt Hodges, Jim Duncan, as we talk about the real estate market. Matt, you mentioned Fannie and Freddie and other mortgage options. I'm going to ask you about a couple that I guess are true competitors, but you see the ads all the time. So can you tell me a little about like Rocket Mortgage and Quicken Mortgage? Because they certainly make themselves seem as like, come online, press a button, get your mortgage, as opposed to Presidential Bank Mortgage, which is, come on into our office, let me put my arm around you and show you, let's take our time and let me make you a true customer and walk you through this.
So sure, there are competitors out there to our business, and they have different models on how they propose to succeed in the world. And one of those models, as you mentioned, is totally automated. So it's based on the consumer keying in accurate data into a website and then getting a result back that works for them. It does not work all the time. It's garbage in, garbage out. If you've heard that phrase before, it often takes the loan officer to assess what the bigger picture is. For someone who's self-employed, often they're only thinking about what they gross every year and not what their net income is after their expenses. So the information that's keyed in could be very wrong. The other thing that we see with online applications like this and companies that do a ton of advertising, and I believe the company you reference is doing significant advertising around that big event a couple weeks ago surrounding football. They spend a lot of money in advertising, and if you look at their fine print, their interest rates tend to be inflated. So the consumer, the smart consumer, also needs to do their due diligence and not just jump to something that looks easy.
And actually, I think the owner of one of those companies makes enough money that he owns a pro basketball team. So obviously, there's a lot of profit in owning one of those companies. Jim, you talked about Zillow, another company that does its thing. It has its own issues with being there. I mean, it's designed to be a realtor of its own, correct?
Yes and no. I mean, they provide pretty much everything except for real estate representation. I mean, that's where, again, it 10 years ago when they came around, 12 years ago, a lot of real estate agents saw them as the opposition and the devil, and there's the worst thing ever. I like it. I mean, I think that's where my clients are searching. That's where the information is in a lot of times. So it's something that I embrace, and I know that they're going to use it. I mean, I don't really spend any time saying don't use Zillow, because for whatever reason, I say I know you're going to use it. But they have Zillow. It's a search place for saving homes, uploading videos, mortgage. I mean, they have Zillow offers now in a lot of markets, which is a whole nother realm of the real estate marketplace. It's a tool that's out there that I think the wise person is going to use it. I mean, it's something that I tell my folks that it may not be the place to get the best information, but it's like the online calculators. It's a place on the internet that can provide some good information. But with anything, you need to vet it and verify that the information is accurate.
Well, how is the market right now? Is it are we selling a lot of homes compared to last year and the year before? Are there more homes on the market, fewer homes on the market? What's going on?
It depends.
I get that every year from you. I feel like we should record that and just play it back. I don't need Jim Duncan here. Matt, please come in and we'll just play recordings from Jim.
When Jim's finished, I'm going to give you more of a bold prediction. So, okay.
I think the market's fine. I mean, the market's been good for a lot of people for the last 10 years.
For a lot of people, are those the same people or everybody else?
I think it depends. I mean, I think that people who are looking for a home that's 3 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, that's in a great location, that is under, $250 or $275 or $300, it's a really difficult market. I think that the ones who are looking for stuff that's, $500 to $800,000 in the county or the city, they have a fair amount to choose from. But I think that it depends on what you're looking for. I mean, I think that the people who are looking at the city center the immediate urban ring, who want walkability, they want off street parking, they want a garage, they want a yard. It's that house that people like is going to go fast if it's presented well and marketed well. I think that the challenge that we've seen in the last 10 years, frankly, is we don't have enough inventory to satisfy demand. We look at the numbers in the city of Charlottesville last year. In 2018, 607 homes sold. In 2019, 565 sold. I think that's largely driven by the fact that there just aren't enough homes in the city of Charlottesville to satisfy the demand that's out there.
Is there a particular reason for that? Is everybody happy here? And so everybody's staying and nothing's being put on the market? Is that because... I mean, I know I've asked this question before, too many homes or more homes are being turned into B&B rather than being sold or rented. Is that because homes are being rented rather than sold? I mean, where are we going with this?
I think, again, in a non-flippant way, I'll tell you where we're going in 18 months when we have hindsight. But to address what your question is about, you know, there are a lot of reasons. I mean, why there are fewer homes in the market. One is people, if they bought their house for, you know, $300,000 10 years ago, and they could sell it today for $425,000 or $450,000 or whatever that number is, and they want to stay, where are they going to go? That next house could be $650,000 or $700,000, which is a hell of a leap. You know, so I think that it's something that people look at where they are and they say, I want to move. This house doesn't suit me as much as it did, you know, 10 years ago, you know, but I think that there's nowhere for me to go. So what a lot of times you're seeing is, you know, a lot of it is in the city. People bought that house 10 years ago for $300,000, $325,000. They could move and spend $600,000 or $700,000, or they can spend $150,000 to renovate and add an addition, and they're choosing to stay. And so that means that those people are going to be happier in that location, but that's one fewer house that's going to come on the market. So it's difficult to look at and say there's any one reason, but I think it's a combination of reasons why fewer homes are coming on the market. But a lot of it is people are staying. You know, they're just happier. You know, they're choosing to stay. They have job stability. They have life stability. You know, they moved when the kids were 2 and 4, and 10 years later they're 12 and 14. Why would they move if they're happy where they are? You've seen nationally the trends are, when I started practicing, 2001, people would stay in their houses between 3 and 5 years. And then, you know, the crash happened, correction happened. But now I think you're looking at people are nationally, they're staying in their houses for closer to 9 to 11 years, which every year that people stay in their houses for longer, that's, you know, another house that's not coming on the market. And then you look at what's replacing that is new construction. And in our market, you know, new construction is, you know, not inexpensive.
And when you say new construction, and Matt, let me bring you in on this, are we talking about new homes, or is this all those apartment and condo setups that we're talking about just in the city, just outside of the city?
Well, so new construction is delineated between single family and multifamily. And multifamily includes apartments as well. If we look just at the single family component, the amount of homes being built nationwide is significantly down from the average since the 60s. I mean, 1.5 million houses were built every single year. We've been well below that. We can't keep up with demand at this point. There's not enough, I would guess, skilled trades to build enough houses to keep up with that demand. So that's part of the issue right now, is the supply is lacking for that reason, and it forces upward pressure, right? It's a supply and demand equation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, so again, you look at the new construction numbers, again, I'll use the county for last year. Median price in 2019 for everything in the county was $376,000. Median price for new construction was $457,000. You know, that's a significant delta. That is oftentimes going to be the choice between buying or selling or renting. So I think that it's, you know, there's not enough new construction. A lot of it is, you know, localities are it is expensive to build a house in Charlottesville and Albemarle. But I think Matt touched on something about how, you know, I think we could get into is the lack of skilled labor. You know, there's been a real push in the last, you know, 10, 20, 30 years of, you know, people are choosing to go to college and incur significant debt, and you are not replacing the skilled trades and the labor to build these houses. So again, it's a supply and demand. If you've got, you know, fewer people who are building the houses, those houses are going to become more expensive because the labor's is more valuable.
Again, our guest today, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty. You can find more info, nestrealty.com, and then go/Jim Duncan. You can find Matt Hodges at Presidential Bank Mortgage and go to presidentialbankmortgage.com. We're talking about the local real estate and the economy today with the two of them. Hang tight. Be right back. And back in action here with Matt and Jim as we talk about local real estate. So let's, you were talking about skilled labor and people going to college, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let me ask you a question. Students going to college are racking up the debt. Do you think that increased student loan debt is going to reduce the number of people who can afford to buy a house? Because when you go to buy a house and then you need to go to get a mortgage and you have a much larger debt bubble and the folks at the mortgage company say, I'm sorry, I can't give you a loan, or I can give you a loan, but it needs to be at this interest rate. I mean, where do we stand with something like that?
Okay, so first, as a loan officer, it's incumbent on me to look at a full debt load that a client has, including student loans.
I understand that, and so, that's why I bring this up.
The second point, though, is...
I'm not blaming you.
It's
not saying you evil person.
It's all Matt's fault.
We do not penalize, though, in terms of interest rate... for student loans.
Okay.
So it's really just, do you qualify for X number or do you need to be X minus $10,000,
okay.
What have you.
Good. Thanks for explaining.
But no
problem.
But
do you factor in the 150 grand of debt that they have at, you know, $400 a month?
Yeah, and so that's one of the key factors is the qualification for student loans now has become complicated. It's not just the number that's on the credit report. Or if it says deferred and there's no number, it's not that. We have to do calculations for a minimum amount of repayment. It doesn't matter what the student loan on the credit report says. We have to then do additional calculations, and it could be much worse than the number printed on the credit report.
And Jim, you've got an entire generation who will they even consider buying a house knowing that they have this debt on their back and going, gosh, I've got to pay this off. Do I want to have this too?
No, I mean, I think we're, you know, we've been, and I think it's you know, using the term shift is overused because every year I've been practicing, it's been another shift. But, you know, I'm seeing that a lot of my clients are being more overt about their payment of student loans. You know, where it is before, you know, 10 years ago, I won't say it was less of an issue, but they were less, you know, they were quieter about it. But if you've got a kid who graduated, I'm 44, so anybody under like 30 is a kid. You know, you've got a kid who graduated college and they've got $130,000 of debt, $160,000 of debt from undergrad, that's going to significantly delay when they can buy a house. They might qualify, but they might not want to qualify. They might, you know, I think that it's something that, you know, you look at, you know, they've got their student loan payment, car payment, insurance. You know, and that's a lot. You know, a lot of outlay every month.
Yeah, so financial education is huge. And just last night, my wife and I were discussing with our 15-year-old. She's a ninth grader. The fact that student loan debt is an important piece of the puzzle, and you know, ways to mitigate that so that it's not weighing upon you into the future after you graduate. And so we had just frank discussions about student loans last night out of nowhere, which was fantastic as a family.
I just, you know, I'm just curious, and I realize there's no way to say it'll be this number. But if you had, you know, for out of 100 individuals, you know, 2 decades ago, 3 decades ago, and 70 of them might have bought a house, I'm curious as to how many might buy a house now with this many student loans. Are we talking about 50? Are we talking about 30? I'm just curious as to what the percentage loss might be going down with this. There's no way to do that. But, you know, as a realtor, as someone working in the mortgage industry, you know, are we going to lose realtors, people leaving because there's so many fewer houses to sell, and because now there might be fewer buyers?
Yeah. Well, I think that there's no way to answer that.
Yeah.
I think that one thing, though, is there are so many things that factor into that question. I mean, you've got, on average, 5 million homes sell every year. And it's been that way for decades. So, I mean, I think that that's, you know, it's a zero-sum game. If, you know, Matt, you know, does more loans than the lender over here, that lender over here might not stay in business. If I sell a house, that's a house that another agent's not going to sell. So I think it depends on, you know, everything depends on what that particular scenario is for that person coming out of college with that debt. But one thing that we're seeing, I'll put this in when we do the story, the National Association of Realtors economists are phenomenal. But there's a story a couple weeks ago that came out and says that the bank of mom and dad, you know, one third of first time home buyers used help from friends or family to purchase a home in the last year.
Absolutely.
You know, so I think that it's something that, again, it's a huge conversation, you know, that transference of generational wealth. Now, there's part, a significant portion of the previous generation that is able to loan money or give their kids. Give, yes.
Always
Matt
give.
Says give.
Always give.
There are no loans. No,
you can voluntarily pay that gift.
If you feel like it.
Exactly.
You know, but they give money to their kids to buy a house. You know, so I think that's something that is, you know, a significant thing when you look at the number of people who are buying houses, particularly first-time homebuyers, who look to the parents to buy a house.
So, Rick, your point, I think, is much bigger than we have time to cover today, but it has to do with schools and guidance counselors and teachers and parents all driving kids on a track to go to four-year college. We are missing kids in the trades who can earn a very good living in plumbing and carpentry and welding and electrical with an apprenticeship that's paid for and have no student loan debt and immediately be able to buy a house because they don't have any debt burden carrying on their backs.
I mean, it's, you know, I think that it is absolutely insane to funnel every kid from high school into a four-year degree college. A lot of, I had a very different, college education. I went to VMI. But if I had been, you know, went to a real school, you know, which, you know, I think that I was 18 years, I had a great education, but gosh, I got my butt kicked for 4 years. But if I'd gone to a real, you know, 4 year degree school, I was 18 years old. I had no idea what I wanted to do. You know, so I think you've got a generation of kids, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old, going to college, and they've got no clue. All they know is that they signed to borrow $50,000 a year or whatever that is.
I was so fortunate because when I was 19, I actually knew what I wanted to do. I went into McIntyre School of Commerce, and I took real estate finance from one of the best professors around, and it was exactly what I needed.
You knew you wanted to be a lender?
I knew I wanted to be in real estate, in finance. I didn't know exactly, but darn if that class didn't speak to me.
Right. I mean, again, I think that's sort of an anomaly.
Right. No, I agree.
To get out of high school and say, I want to do this, and then actually do this, whatever that is. But I think that, again, I think, Rick, the student loan conversation is something that's not going away for, you know, ever, if you will, because, you know, these schools are expensive. They get more expensive every year, and the debt burden gets more expensive every year, and these kids are coming out and they've got $100,000 that's going to take them.
You know, certain presidential candidates have some plans
conversation.
Okay.
We don't have enough bourbon.
All right.
Or time or patience.
That's probably true, unless we wanted to hang out for multiple Sundays in a row. We are talking with Jim Duncan, Nest Realty, Matt Hodges, Presidential Bank Mortgage. Let's talk about real estate and the economy and not much on politics today. Matt, you had sent me something to talk about common sense underwriting.
Yeah, so
I didn't know that was a thing. Share.
It sometimes is. You know, sometimes you can break through the weight of what Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Ginnie Mae says you've got to manage through a process.
What's Ginnie?
So Ginnie is the government entity that underwrites for FHA loans and for VA loans. So non-conventional.
I knew the answer, but I didn't know if, you know, everybody
else
did.
Okay, good job. Yeah. So, underwriting tries to find solutions within the existing guidelines that were published in order to get somebody approved, right? We're not trying to get around anything, but we're trying to find those paths. And sometimes Fannie Mae has a path that's better than Freddie Mac. For example, if someone's self-employed for only 1 year, you might be able to get a one-year tax return, whereas Freddie might just do 2 years. So there's different paths to follow for different clients. But on occasion, you've got to move outside of that and do a loan that is non-QM. So a qualified mortgage fits the guidelines for Fannie and Freddie. And one of the things that our company does, and not just us, we're not unique in this. Other companies do it too, but we'll do ATR loans. So that's ability to repay. ATR is the short, but not necessarily qualified mortgage. And that could be for a unique situation where someone, and this is one that closed this week, someone who was self-employed for a number of years in the same line of work and then goes into an employment situation, but no salary, 100% commission. It doesn't fit. Fannie and Freddie doesn't understand how that works. But after a year, we know that that client is going to be approvable. They'd like to buy now. We think that they're a pretty good bet. They've got high credit scores. They've got reserves left in the bank. Their debt-to-income ratios look good. We might take a risk on somebody like that because it makes sense. Not always. This is going to be a unique situation that fits guidelines.
Fascinating. I mean, because a lot of people don't think of... I mean, and not to... It goes back to that... What you said earlier about garbage in, garbage out.
Exactly.
For the website related things where you don't get your arm put around you and says, come on in and let's talk. Let me be your friend while we do the paperwork.
So in this instance, it was the bank president plus two others who did one approval. It was my underwriter and Glenn Allen who did a second approval. And it was the lead underwriter for the bank that did the third approval. All of them had to agree that this was a reasonable deal to do.
Jim, one of the things I read about in preparation for today's show was that there have been a noticeable percentage of sales in the area in Nelson County versus the true rurals of Albemarle County because of high-speed internet access being more available in Nelson.
It's crazy, right? I mean, the Nelson County has better fiber availability than does Albemarle County. I have clients who are moving, hopefully, into Nelson County in part because of Firefly, which is the provider. It's a partnership with CVEC, the Central Virginia Electric Cooperative, that they are rolling out fiber to all of CVEC's customers, of CVEC's customers, which is amazing. You know, where a lot of my clients, and I always make this number up, but 18 to 23.5% of my clients work out of the house. You know, people need it for Netflix. Yeah, it's a reasonably high percentage, where everybody. Needs and air quotes, Netflix and Amazon, all this stuff. But for people who work out of the house, they need high-speed internet.
Is that co-located over the power lines?
It runs at least parallel with them. Hmm. I mean, the one I'm looking at is once we get the place under construction and we get a meter in place from CVEC, then Firefly will come in and provide the node for the internet. I think that having high-speed internet is something that is... It's a clear economic benefit for the people who live there, obviously, but for the locality as well, to be able to attract people who are going to work out of the house. So, it's astonishing how much better the fiber is in the rural parts of Nelson County versus Albemarle County, which is, sad to say, is negligent in providing this sort of program. So it's just, for me, it's an amazing thing to be able to tell my clients is that if you go into Nelson, at least in the parts where they have the nodes, you can get high-speed internet.
Let me talk about, you talk about going into Nelson County and rural Albemarle. Do you have discussions with customers about the commute to your work, not for those obviously who work at home. Can you share conversation with folks about the length to where you work? Hey, if you buy this house, where are you going to work? The length of your drive, the traffic, because here you'll be driving with the crowd versus against the crowd. Do you see that driveway? Snow issues that you should think about, et cetera?
Oh, absolutely, man. I think so. Backing up one step, you know, that everything you just said is why when someone comes to Charlottesville, I'm all cold. I advise them to rent for a year because it's way easier to get a new lease than it is to sell a house that you bought inadvisedly. But absolutely, I think that it's important that people consider all of those things. It's easy to do the math if you're, you know, if you're 45 minutes out from your job, and that's an hour and a half each way, you know, an hour and a half every day. First, there's the value of your time. Time matters. But there's also gas, wear and tear on the car, late fees for daycare, if that's a thing. The short answer is, throughout history, civilizations tend to be within 20-25% of their home base. So I think that it's important for when I put people through the exercise of, you know, pretend you're living here. You know, do the drive from this house to your work at all hours of the day, particularly at peak hours. Pretend that you're making that left turn out of the house in the mornings against traffic. Think about if you want to come home for lunch and see the kids, if you have kids. Or walk the dog, or take a 20-minute nap. You know, whatever those things are, you know, it's. And I tell all my buyers that I'm fairly confident that we can find a house that's going to be fine. You'll find your 4 bedrooms, 2.5 baths, with, you know, a kitchen and bathrooms and whatever. The house is fine. It's the getting to the house and leaving the house and what your friends are like around you in that neighborhood, if you're doing a neighborhood, that matter the most. So I think that it's important. I try to pull people out of the "I need this house," and that's a factor in the algorithm, if you will, when they're looking at will we be happy here, and will we be happy here in 7 years? Because I had a client years ago. She didn't buy anything, thankfully, but she was like 23, 24 years old, and I wasn't trying to talk her out of anything, but I was trying to provide the information to her. And the second time she came in with her parents. And I'll never forget this. We were sitting at the conference room at Nest. And, you know, I'm on one side of the table and the three of them on the other side. And the mom looks at the girl and says, "You know, if you buy this house, you're going to be stuck for 5 years." You know, and you could see the color drain from her face in the realization of, oh, dear God. You know, I'm so used to moving every 9 months or 12 months. And now you're telling me I'm going to be in this place for 5 years minimum. She didn't buy, you know, and I think that was the right decision for her. But sometimes it's important to have that voice of reason, if you will, of life experience, which frighteningly, sometimes I'm that voice of reason, that says, you need to think about this. You know, think about life here for 2 months, 12 months, you know, 90 months, and then make a good decision. So yes is the short answer.
All right. Our guest today, again, Matt Hodges, Presidential Bank Mortgage, and Jim Duncan from Nest Realty, as we talk about local real estate and the economy around it. Hang tight. Be right back. And we're back with our gentleman for the day, Jim Duncan, Matt Hodges. Matt, one of the items that you wanted to make sure we brought up today was appraisal waivers. And I have to tell you, I don't know what appraisal waivers are.
Best thing since sliced bread.
Well, you know, I prefer pita bread, so...
Naan's good. Now I'm hungry.
So, let me inform you. An appraisal waiver is a result of automated underwriting. So, fancy word for saying I've taken somebody's loan application and put it into Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac's system. And that system has said, yeah, we like this buyer, you know, collect pay stubs and collect bank statements. Oh, and by the way, we agree that the value that you keyed into your system is accurate, and we're not going to require that you get an independent third-party appraisal to validate the sales price of this house or for refinance the projected value of the house.
Huh. But, okay. So is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Is it?
It depends.
Exactly. So
why is that a surprising answer?
On a refinance, it streamlines the process. It lowers costs for a client.
Well, first of all, what is an appraisal cost?
Appraisal's about
$500. How much am I saving?
About $500.
And so that would come out of my pocket,
correct,
the buyer.
Correct.
Which I'm probably not going to pay you right now. I'm probably going to...
You are, actually. Add application, they're going to pay us the appraisal cost.
Okay. So, good thing or bad thing to have it waived?
So, again, on a refinance, I think it's a reasonable thing because it streamlines the process. Someone's already paying their bills on time, right? They're just wanting to get a lower payment and have more disposable cash, put more money back in the economy, save money, whatever the case
but
may be.
How do you know if whether or not the house has been trashed?
Ooh, that's a good one. We
from,
don't.
From the bank?
Yeah. We have no idea.
I mean, especially if you live in a... I mean, I come from an area that's flood-prone. I mean, how do you know whether or not the house has had some serious issues? And I guess you would know whether or not the house had been truly flooded. But how do you know if the house has been cared for?
Yeah, you don't. And it's a good point. Because an appraisal is validating that it is a safe place to live. First and foremost,
that they could have a roof that needs 30,
right,
you know,
broken windows, HVAC system not pushing hot air. You could have trip hazards in the house because the carpet's coming up. Lots of things could be wrong. You're right.
I almost fell down the house yesterday, downstairs, when I tripped on the top of the stairs. No, but it depends. If I'm representing a buyer, I want that appraisal because I want to have validation from the bank, from a third party, that they are protected.
But that's a sale.
Right. It exists on purchases.
I would think that every sale should have one. I mean, if I was buying the house...
Well, it depends on how confident you are. You know, as a buyer, if you have the information in front of you and you say, I know that, you know, my buyers know what they're doing once we're finished, they know it's worth no more than $375, and they're paying $367 or whatever. They know that it's worth that, and the appraisal for them. And
yeah,
that,
but that's fool. I would. Think
hang
that's
on, hang
foolish.
On, hang on. I don't disagree, but they feel comfortable with that, and they're okay with that waiver.
Yeah, but you're shaking your head when you turn around.
But
out of the room with them, you're shaking your head.
But if I have the seller, and we get a contract from, you know, and it's the house under contract, and I hear that there's an appraisal waiver, awesome, because that's one less contingency, yep, that representing the seller we need to deal with.
Right, but that's the seller. But as the buyer, you're like, come on, well, people, you're...
Well, that's why I'm saying it depends on your perspective. Now, when we get questions in the office, someone will say, I have this thing. And my first question is, who do I represent? The buyer or the seller?
Here's what Fannie says. A small percentage of purchase loans qualify for appraisal waiver offer, and borrowers always have the choice to obtain an appraisal. You're not required to use the waiver. It has to also be a property that has an existing appraisal in its system. Fannie Mae has to have already seen this property at some point in the past.
I didn't know that.
Yep. It's a requirement. So is it a good thing or a bad thing? It's a thing, and clients are told about that opportunity and told about the risks, benefits, and then they can make an informed decision.
I mean, if they feel comfortable as informed buyers that they're paying a fair value, why not save $500?
You've got a buyer, seller, listing agent, selling agent. At minimum, those four people have agreed upon what this house is worth with a contract.
In our market, I feel very comfortable saying this, that the agents with whom I work and the lenders with whom I work are all above board. I don't have any concerns. Like other markets, I remember from the crash, there was some funky stuff going on. But I don't see that. I didn't see that then in our market, and I don't see that now in our market. You have people who are advocating for their clients effectively, and they are trying to get, you know, the buyer's trying to get the least money for the house, or, you know, pay the least money, and the seller's trying to get the most. And you have, you know, usually you have agents on either side who are representing their clients well. So you have, you, through that process, you know, you reach fair market value.
Yeah, but now people are probably waiving it because there's a half dozen other people trying to get the house.
Well, they do that, you know, a lot of times in cash transactions. There's no appraisal at all. And so, it, you know, I'm seeing some instances in our market where you're seeing, you know, cash offers.
Yikes.
And you're also seeing people waiving home inspections, which terrifies me.
Oh, gosh.
So it's,
I'd much rather have a realtor's opinion on value than waive an inspection.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been able to...
Inspection is a four-hour-long process that digs into the house.
It's $400, $600. It's the best money you'll ever spend. So, yeah, I mean, so for, if anybody takes anything away from this show, please be really considerate if you can, if you're thinking about waiving that home inspection. It's representationally, as a buyer, I hate it. As a seller, awesome.
Jim Duncan, Matt Hodges here as we talk about local real estate. Gentlemen, many economists believe that a recession is coming. Do you think it's going to happen in 2020? And whether it happens in 2020, 2021, is how would it affect the real estate and mortgage industry?
You know, I was at Inman Conference, you know, in the last week of January.
That's a real estate
conference in New York. And, you know, one economist there was saying that he's predicting a recession in 2022. You know, and others are saying we're fine for a couple of years. And others are saying it's going to stay strong for, you know, an indefinite amount of time. Again, I've been doing this since 2001. Matt's been a little bit longer. The market will shift at some point. It has to. Nothing's going to go up or go down in perpetuity.
But this is the longest economic expansion in our country's history.
So, I mean, it's going to shift. And we'll deal with it. You know, we were talking about a recession 3 years ago, and one of my colleagues said, you know, we represented buyers during the crash, and we've represented sellers during the crash. The market's going to be what the market is. I think it's people need to make choices today if they're buying or selling to try and build in life stability, if at all possible, so that when that shift happens, they're best able to weather the storm.
Recessions are only visible 6 months out. 2 quarters after it's occurred, that's when you know you were in a recession. Okay, so it's always a back-looking. It will not happen in 2020. 2021 is probably a 50% chance. By 2022, probably a much higher percentage chance of a recession. But real estate is local. All real estate is local. Our market is so insulated by large employers, specifically UVA, that we tend to work through those challenges better than other markets do.
We hope.
Historically.
We do. I think that, you know, go back to where we started the conversation about micro markets. You know, if and when a shift happens, pay attention to what's happening in the Charlotte Albemarle market. Pay attention to the micro markets there. Because, again, during the crash 12 years ago, you know, you'd see these headlines about Phoenix and Las Vegas and Miami. It's like, yeah, it sucks for them, but that's not us. It leads into the psychology of the buyers and sellers and consumers more than anything else that's relevant to our market.
We were on the Scooby-Doo roller coaster versus the Big Bad Wolf.
Yeah, one of those was fun.
Little hills.
The Big Bad Wolf is gone, I think.
Our guest today, Matt Hodges from Presidential Bank Mortgage and Jim Duncan from Nest Realty. One of the things that I have on my list here is privacy in those Ring doorbells.
Mm-hmm.
Jim, how many of those do you see when you take people looking for homes?
A lot. I mean, it's something that it's, you know, in the MLS, there's a disclosure, you know, checkbox, you know, recording device, yes or no. And it's a gray area. I mean, I would argue that a Ring doorbell that records you is a recording device.
Those got hacked, right? Just for a quick explanation.
Right.
They haven't all been hacked, but some of them got hacked so that people elsewhere in the world mm-hmm. could see into your home and see what was going on at your house.
Right. So some argue that because they are only, you know, motion activated, they're not always recording, so it's not a recording device. I think it's like a live radio show. When I'm in a house, I assume I'm being recorded by somebody. which I think is fair and reasonable. I think it's something that people need to be mindful of when they're walking through a house as buyers, that if they say, God, this house really smells, and the seller's recording them, maybe they gets used against them in negotiations of, I don't like these people because they think my house stinks. I think it's something that, you know, houses that have Alexas in them or the Google thing or the Apple Home, those things, you know, you could, you know, walk into a house and order, you know, toilet paper, you know, which I've heard of that happening in other parts of the country. And people showing houses ordering, you know, 30 things of toilet paper, which the 13-year-old me thinks is hysterical. The professional in me says, that's awful.
We're all giggling.
Yeah. So I think it's something that, you know, just be mindful. I think that for anybody, be mindful of recording devices in the houses. I mean, I think that, again, it's, you know, everything gets hacked eventually. If you have one of those, try and, you know, change the password from the default password. It's not hard.
I also saw where there was a Newsday investigation recently. I guess it wasn't recently, but it was published recently. It was a three-year investigation.
Yeah.
Matt, you mentioned that your business gets shopped.
Oh, every loan officer gets shopped.
So can we talk about those together and what getting shopped is and a little bit about the investigation?
Sure. Yeah, yeah. So getting shopped basically means that you are providing consistent responses and assistance to any group of people, any person that calls you that inquires about mortgage lending, that you're being consistent in your approach back to them. And not in a discriminatory mode, moving down one path towards a certain neighborhood or a different down payment amount or making assumptions about someone's credit score or providing or not providing information as requested because you feel that it will lead to a small loan amount or extra time doing a loan.
So you're not judging someone based on their last name.
Or their voice. Correct.
Or something like that.
Yeah. It's pretty easy usually to spot the shoppers, and sometimes I've called them on it.
How is it easy to do that?
Well, the most common way to find out is to ask them, which realtor referred you to me? And they stumble and don't have that ready as part of their script back to me.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, the from my perspective, the Newsday thing was it was a 3-year investigation in I believe New Jersey, and it was tested. It was a fantastic investigation in that it was done correctly and well. But what it did is it looked at they shopped, you know, a black person and a white person both went to the same agent, same everything else except for their race, and they recorded all these things. And, you know, we'll put a link up when this thing gets posted. But it was short story is that there is disparate treatment amongst many of those realtors, where, you know, one person of one race was treated differently than someone of another race. Things were said differently to one than another. And we don't have time to get into the depth of what happened there. But the takeaway for me, and as we talk about within Nest and colleagues around the country, you know, as realtors, we have a phenomenal responsibility to treat people equally. I don't say fairly because I think fair is arbitrary. You know, my now nearly 16-year-old daughter's fair is different than my 26-year-old daughter's. You know, it's different than Matt's fair. But I treat everybody the same. I tell people that I don't discriminate because it's neither nice, profitable, or legal, in that order. But it's something that this investigation. I encourage everybody to read it and spend time. And for the realtors who listen to this, think about what you say, because we have a terrifying responsibility to not lead people wrong. There are parts of the country that these people were saying things, you know, they'd say something to Matt, say, you don't really want to go to this neighborhood. You know, if you do, go to the, go to the grocery store at 10 o'clock at night and get diapers just to see what you think. Which the person was leading into, it's a crime-ridden area, you being this race, shouldn't go there. One agent was recorded saying, I can't tell you which schools to go to because that's steering. So I kind of think of a different word. I use the word educate. to help you make a decision to go to the right schools. And it's, you know, again, it's, you know, it shook every person I know, because it's, you know, you say things offhand. You know, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I would have said, you know, drive through the neighborhood and look for kids. I don't, because that's, you know, that's inherently discriminating against those who don't have kids. I think 3, 4, 5 times about what I say to my clients. So it's not misconstrued, and so it's not something that is the wrong thing to say. I think it's incumbent on everybody to read this story in this investigation and watch the videos. And again, as realtors, think about what we say, because it has life-altering impact on people's lives. And we have a tremendous responsibility to not just talk about it, but call each other out. And if I hear, not Matt, but if Matt's a colleague, and Matt says something that I hear over here and I think is the wrong thing to say, probably not right there, but have that dialogue with him later of, man, you were telling people to go to this is the best school district. That's not something I say, because best school district, one, is completely dependent on who the kid is and what the family is. And two, it can be easily construed as it's X race or Y race. I say, here are the places where you can get information on the schools, and I want you to rent for a year and make friends and ask them about what the best schools are for your kid. Because every school is different. Every kid is different. There is no best or worst, in my opinion. But yeah, the Newsday story was... It was a tremendous feat of journalism. They should get, you know, Pulitzer or whatever else, because it was a remarkably eye-opening look into the world of real estate practice. And it's, again, it's something that we have I said this a lot, you know, we have a responsibility as practitioners to just not do the wrong thing, because you can put a family in this side of town that is, you know, their race, and it can have a positive or negative impact on the rest of their lives and their kids' lives and the generational effect of how these people live. So, yeah, it's something that it shook us to our core, and we're very thoughtful about what we say.
We're going to finish up on that, because that's amazing. Our guests today, Jim Duncan from Nest Realty and Matt Hodges from Presidential Bank Mortgage. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here.
Rick, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Rick.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC-LP, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Engineering assistance was by Mike Friend. The Wake-Up Call is produced by Dan Gould. Show archives can be found at SeavillePodcast.com. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.